evening. I'm Melissa Idris. You're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The Home Ministry has announced that all refugees and asylum seekers who have been issued cards by the UN High Commission for Refugees, or UNHCR, must now register with the government's own database. It's called the Tracking Refugees Information System, or TRIS for short. Now, those registered with TRIS will then be issued a government-issued special identity card, MyRC. Now, this comes amid a proposal by the National Security Council to shut down the UNHCR office in Malaysia, which they claim will allow Malaysia to better manage the refugee situation without, quote, foreign interference, and for the Home Ministry to be the only entity to register refugees in the country. So what impact will it have on the refugee community here? Joining us now is Adrian Pereira. He is the Executive Director at North-South Initiative, which is a migrant and refugee rights NGO. Adrian, thanks for joining me today. The government's Tracking Refugees Information System, this TRIS program, it's been around for several years now, since 2017, as I understand it. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the Home Ministry's insistence now that MyRC should be the only legitimate documentation for refugees and asylum seekers here, rather than the UNHCR cards.
Yeah, so thanks Melissa for having me. Firstly, we can maybe start on the premise that Malaysia hasn't developed a comprehensive framework or legal system to recognize and manage refugees and asylum seekers. So that is the overarching framework that is missing, that then enables all the other directives and suggestions and even protections. Now, when that is missing, it becomes very complicated legally to formulate and come up with all these other directives, which are very ad hoc. So I think from the starting point itself, the whole question is very problematic.
Okay, just to interrupt very quickly, when you say no comprehensive framework, what does that mean? And why haven't we got one? We've had refugees here since the 1970s. It's been 50 years. What does a comprehensive framework look like?
Yeah, so it could be a law itself that gives the legal definition and the legal mechanics of how Malaysia should then welcome, host and help with the repatriation, or even maybe provide citizenship one day for the refugees and asylum seekers. So that is missing. And when a very important legal gap exists, or a vacuum of a framework, this is where different actors will, fill in the gaps with their own ad hoc agendas, which is very dangerous. And currently, unfortunately, the UNHCR has come under attack in this particular case. Yeah.
Okay. Angel, what do the UNHCR cards represent? So for refugees and asylum seekers who are UNHCR cardholders, what does that represent to the wider community? What does it signal?
Yeah, so we need to understand the role of UNHCR in Malaysia and how they have become the sole and competent body that processes requests for asylum and also for refugee status determination. And later on, they then go on to help refugees with their resettlement process. So it's a very tedious, very thorough, very comprehensive process, which the government is now saying that, they are going to take over. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that I don't trust the Malaysian government. It's just not the government's job to do that, because it is a mandate by an international body which has the international standards and has a fair and unbiased procedure to do that. So that has already been agreed by the international community in the UN. So it's a bit surprising and very strange that Malaysia now proposes that it take over that role. And it's just so bizarre for me to comprehend.
So, okay, Can I ask you then, what do we know about this MyRC and the TRIS program?
Yeah, so to be honest, I think every government has its right to protect and defend its sovereignty. And in this case, Malaysia is building the case, or the Malaysian government is building the case, that it needs to know who is here. But like I said, without a legal framework, all these ad hoc proposals have come up. And one of it is this, this MyRC card, which has then been questionably, you know, outsourced to a private company. So what's going on? You then have data protection issues. And, you know, if you claim that refugees, migration, asylum seeker is a national security issue, why is a private company now being given the task? So maybe it was done for testing period, but we don't really know. So we, to be honest, the refugee community is confused. They don't know what exactly this card offers, what degree of protection, whether it would then offer them access to, services beyond security, for example, healthcare, medical subsidies, pharmaceutical subsidies. So we don't know whether it gives protection when they are looking for housing, whether they are looking for jobs. There has been no clear indicator, and this is the problem. When you don't have a proper law that governs this matter, this is where every different actor will come with their own strange and bizarre agendas.
Right. Well, I have noticed some of the comments made by Hamza Zainuddin saying that under this TRIS program, under the MyRC card, well, you know, refugees and asylum seekers might be considered for access to healthcare and education, job opportunities, which is what we have been hoping for the refugee community here in Malaysia. Are you confident that that is the direction that we are now heading towards?
Yeah, so I'll try not to be my biased self, but you know, if the government has these discussions in a transparent way, with the accountability that comes with the services regarding the card, that would definitely build our confidence in, you know, whether we should recognize, or whether the community, even more important than the NGO's opinion, the community needs to be convinced. But nobody has displayed that, you know, the lack of information. Apparently and obviously, Malaysia doesn't have a Right to Information Act. So these are deals that are done in secrecy, and it's very difficult for the community to decide, and hence the confusion. You know.
What have you heard, through your work? What has been the reception of the refugee community towards this program? Are they looking at it with optimism, or is there skepticism still?
Yeah, so we find both opinions in the field. So there are some who, despite having the card, they still get harassed by enforcement officers who very intelligently and mischievously say that, no, we haven't signed the Refugee Convention, we don't have a law for refugees, so why must we recognize this card? So that has been some of the negative experience. But on the other hand, some communities are saying, yeah, let's, we have been holding the card for a certain number of years, it has deflected some degree of abuses from some authorities, so why not? So there's no conclusive sentiment from the ground, and they are demanding for clarity. And we hope that the government, being a member of the Human Rights Council, would take this a bit more seriously, and even more important, listen to the voices of the refugees, listen to the voices of the asylum seekers. They shouldn't be treated in the current way they are now.
I do want to ask you though, some of the comments made by the National Security Council, also the Home Ministry, what seems to happen to me is that they, the government, and then quoted verbatim by the media, the government often uses the term refugee and migrant interchangeably, especially when it comes to its policy discourse. And when it comes to this issue of the UNHCR cards and the TRIS program, they seem to point out that undocumented migrants are using are drawn to Malaysia and use the UNHCR protection as a way to skirt authority. So I do want to ask you whether a distinction should be made and whether it matters, the difference if there is a difference between refugee and migrant.
Yeah, so the irony is the National Security Council's principles or their own standards actually categorize them together. So you have, for whatever purpose or agenda, have wrongly categorized refugees as undocumented migrants. And like I said earlier, you know, it goes back to not having that legal framework a law in the form of a law to then, you know, provide guidance and wisdom. And then with the phenomenon mixed migration, where refugees and migrants come together, you then have the difficulty of, you know, identifying. But and that is a real issue. I mean, it UNHCR struggles with it, the community struggles with it. But in principle, as a rights-based activist or, you know, a government that respects the UN human rights principles, a paper shouldn't be the determining factor of you to access rights and protection, you know. It's an identity, so you know who you are and you can present yourself, but it doesn't mean that should be the reason to deny your rights. So these two issues are what I think the National Security Council needs more clarity. If they are confused, you can always talk to the legal experts. We are also here, you know, there's right. No...
May I ask you then, you know, there are, so Hamza Zainuddin said that, if I may quote him, those who enter illegally, he gave an example, those who enter illegally, they're breaching our immigration laws. It's almost like if someone breaks into your house without invitation, they're committing an offence. Do we just let them in? Adrian, how would you respond to, or what would you say to those who are persuaded by this argument?
Yeah, so if you look at the role of UNHCR, they have a very rigorous process of due diligence and checking to determine whether an asylum seeker has a legitimate claim or not. So we shouldn't make the decision to reject them while they are out in sea and struggling for safety. You can welcome them, provide them some degree of shelter and let the due process happen, which is already being done by UNHCR. I suspect UNHCR and the Malaysian government has another argument that is happening elsewhere, which nobody knows, and that has, you know, affected the relationship. So it's sad that end of the day, refugees and, you know, undocumented migrants then become the victims of such a squabble, yeah, which should be solved easily. Yeah.
Adrian, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Adrian Pereira from North South Initiative. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about the management and protection of refugees and asylum seekers in our country. Joining us now, we have Lillian Fun. She is the co-founder and international director of Gatanyo Foundation, which is a regional humanitarian organization based in KL and in Aceh, Indonesia. She's also the chair of the Rohingya Working Group at the Asia Pacific Refugee Rights Network, and Secretary of the All-Party Parliamentary Group Malaysia on Refugee Policy. Lillian, thank you for joining me on the show today. I'm wondering what you make of the Home Ministry's plan to have all refugees and asylum seekers who are UNHCR cardholders to now register with the government's own TRIS database, the Tracking Refugees Information System, and have them, all of them, carry government-issued MyRC cards.
So I actually think that in principle, it's not a bad idea to have a government actually issue their own identity card for refugees as long as it actually provides services to refugees. And in this case, I think that the government has actually looked for quite a long time at what types of services could be extended to refugees for them to be able to access. And as we understand, the MyRC should be able to actually grant access to certain services in Malaysia, which include bank accounts and a few other things. And I think also eventually access to employment. That has been stated by the Home Ministry, and there is quite a detailed plan already in terms of, you know, what types of entitlements people who hold this card would get. And that is going to be detailed in the National Security Council Directive number 33, which is being amended and is, you know, sort of, we're all sort of waiting its actual finalization and confirmation. The problem, I think, with this is that on the one hand, it's very practical to extend services. It's all these are services that are obviously very much needed. But I think that we also need to understand that this is not a replacement for a process which UNHCR is in charge of, which is refugee status determination. This card is basically registering people who are already determined to be refugees by UNHCR and then giving them another card which gives them access to certain services in Malaysia. This is not a procedure which makes the determination if a person is indeed a refugee seeking protection due to persecution or a threat in their country of origin. So these are actually very different processes. Okay. So I think that on the one hand, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it needs to be implemented in the right way and be recognized for a service and a card which has certain purposes.
Okay, all right. So, but on a related issue then, what do you make of the National Security Council's proposal to shut down the UNHCR office in Malaysia? I mean, they're claiming that they want to be the only entity to be able to register refugees in Malaysia. They're also claiming that, you know, Malaysia will better manage its refugee situation without, if I may quote them, the foreign interference is what they're calling it.
Yes, I think so. This is it's not the first time that we've heard this type of rhetoric from the government. The Home Ministry, the Home Minister, has also expressed similar sentiments. I think we need to unpack these statements a little bit. And I think, you know, number one, they don't really make a lot of sense because actually, you know, the MyRC card is not the UNHCR card. And, you know, the purposes are extremely different. But I also think what we need to unpack is obviously, the government feels that it has been excluded from it, the management process of refugees. And HCR has been trying to engage the government to, you know, explain more and actually even train the government to sort of do a handover. But there are already some quite fundamental, I think, disagreements or differences in perspective on how that should be done. And because of that, I feel that the government has some frustrations with the way the process has been managed or the way they've been excluded, you know, how they perceive they've been excluded through that process, and they want more ownership. So I think if we interpret this to be, you know, not just take the words literally, but actually look at it as this is the government really saying that they want ownership over refugee management, in a way that's not a bad thing. But I think what we need to do is actually engage more with the government and these various ministries and sort of, you know, try to show them best practice, show them what good refugee management actually looks like, show them different models, you know, what's worked elsewhere. And when we get to the point where we can actually, you know, take that on, because ultimately it should be a state's responsibility to manage refugees in the territory. So, you know, I hope that one day Malaysia will be fully in charge of management of refugees, but we need to do it in a way that is actually in line with international standards. And we're not there yet. You know, registration is not full refugee management yet.
Would you mind sharing what you think needs to be in place for that to happen? I mean, currently Malaysia doesn't have any kind of a comprehensive framework when it comes to the management of refugees and asylum seekers. What are the gaps that's caused by the lack of a national framework, and what needs to be in place for this to be done well, as you clearly want it to be?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the point, Melissa. I mean, you know, we having a registration system where you're, you know, giving people cards is not a substitute for having a national framework for refugee protection that actually states very clearly legal protection for refugees, the type of status of legal recognition that refugees will receive, and, you know, an entire, you know, there's so many aspects, right, that have to be covered in terms of, you know, protection from arrest, protection from detention, the actual legal right to stay, the legal right to work. So a lot of extension of rights and explaining also very clearly what the obligations of that individual would be. If Malaysia is to eventually one day conduct its own refugee determination procedures, I mean, that process takes a very long time because it really takes building that expertise over many, many years. If Malaysia would like to go into that direction where we are the ones determining refugee status, that's, you know, actually usually governments do that when they sign the convention, right? Because when they sign the convention, that's when you then, you're basically acceding to a set of principles and practices which guarantee that you are abiding by, or at least aspiring to, you know, adhere to international standards that have been determined. So I think that if we want to go down that direction, well, the next clear step is actually looking at how we sign the convention. And I'm not quite sure that Malaysia really thinks they want to do that. So I feel that there's still a lot of thinking that needs to be done. The government needs to sort of understand that these things come together, actually. And, you know, if we want to, it's not something we can rush into. You know, there are certain things we can do, but if we're really trying to go all the way, that takes a very long time and a lot more planning and thinking and a proper roadmap.
Okay. Coming to your point about your sense being that the government would like to have more ownership over the process of registering, of protection and management of refugees, what is then your sense of the government's attitude towards refugees and asylum seekers? Has there been, you know, in the recent past, has there been an improvement or would you say a deterioration of those attitudes?
So I think that we have quite mixed attitudes in the government right now. We don't have a single attitude. And I think that's partly, you know, part of the problem and the confusion. We have actually quite contradictory positions. And even now, I think even with this particular, you know, sort of issue, we've actually seen, you know, quite negative statements about UNHCR, about refugees. But then in fact, what's happening is not as negative as it could be. You know, it's not basically saying that, you know, we're denying refugees all kinds of services. I mean, which in fact has been the case for, you know, a very long time. And I think finally we're coming to the point where the government is deciding to extend certain types of services to refugees, but in order to do that, they need to have proper data and, you know, proper registration system, which is actually not a bad thing. I mean, a lot of it depends on how it's carried out, you know, having proper information to refugees, having proper guarantees that refugees who hold this card will not get arrested. So it's very contradictory in some ways. So I feel that, you know, there's too much politicization of this issue at the higher levels. The issue constantly, you know, becomes one about, you know, keeping foreigners out. And there again, it just shows that we don't understand actually what a refugee is very well. You know, they're not undocumented foreign migrants who are just coming in for opportunities. These are people who need protection. So if we're serious about having a refugee management system, it should actually be based on a desire to protect refugees, not just about having to manage a population that's in our territory. And I feel that that's sort of where we are right now. You know, there are obviously certain ministers and even our prime minister who recently announced, you know, recognizing refugees as a vulnerable group. I mean, there are things that are being done. The foreign minister obviously has been a big advocate of refugee education and protection, also understanding the fact that there's so much conflict in the region and that's not going to end anytime soon. So there are parts of the government, I think, that actually do understand the issue, but we need a more consistent and coherent policy on refugees and attitude towards refugees by the government.
Well, you're absolutely right about the government sometimes using refugees and undocumented migrants interchangeably. And I think that sometimes that conflation can have serious consequences for the safety of refugees. I do want to come back and ask you very quickly about how other countries do it. What are other countries doing? Countries who haven't yet signed to the Convention of Refugees, like Malaysia, how do they balance the management and protection and registration of refugees in their countries?
So Indonesia, for example, and we're, you know, I'm in Bangkok right now, and we're having a sort of regional discussion on refugees with UNHCR, IOM, and a lot of NGOs. And we were exchanging views on, you know, practices at the policy level. Indonesia, you know, they obviously have a smaller population of refugees and a very different kind of demography. But Indonesia has not signed the Refugee Convention, is probably not planning on signing it anytime very soon, but they've put in place a framework which is, you know, basically based on a presidential regulation. It's a presidential regulation that was passed in 2016, you know, post, basically in the aftermath of the 2015 Andaman Sea crisis. You know, Indonesia realized that there were people who were going to try to come and, you know, escaping conflict and would end up basically in Indonesian waters. And this is a framework that allows for safe disembarkation of refugees. It recognizes the term refugees as defined by the convention, even though this is not, you know, in some way a kind of a, it's not actually a comprehensive law even. It's a presidential regulation on certain things, but they've done that. And I think that's a great first step, you know, for right. Indonesia to allow actually disembarkation, to allow their government agencies to coordinate with each other, coordinate with organizations, humanitarian NGOs, coordinate with the UN, coordinate with international donors on refugee management and getting assistance for that. So I think there are options in, you know, that have been demonstrated by even some of our closest neighbors.
Right.
We don't have to jump to signing the convention. There are things that we can do to have certain levels of legal framework.
Lillian, thank you so much for joining me on the show tonight. Lillian Fan from Guntania Foundation. And that's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching. Good night.